Welcome to the 468th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Some days it's warm down here, some days it's not so warm down here. So we were in the 50s this morning, so we're still getting a little touch of spring before summer hits us between the eyes, which is kind of nice. I guess I'll start with an injury update. Again, thank you for all the emails and suggestions on my ankle tendonitis. It is evolving in a positive direction. Today I walked 3 miles. Trio and I did a 17-minute mile pace. So that was one of our best pace, which was predominantly pain-free. So I'm very happy about that. I get some discomfort afterwards. There's still some issues, but I think I'm starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. So I will keep doing my rehab exercises and continue them. Glute strengthening as well as ankle mobility. I found a couple new exercises that really mobilize the knees and ankles and hips. So all good. So, you know, forward progress. Hopefully won't do anything stupid to set myself back, but we'll continue to gradually increase the mileage. I'm not going to run until I can really walk and come out of it and not have any pain throughout the day or stiffness. And I really, it's really minimal for the most part, so that's good. I haven't did a fruit tree update. We have mangoes growing. I mean, they are the size of peas right now, but we're very excited. We've made it through the cold season and the windy season, and we have several trees that have baby mangoes on them. So hopefully by June or July, we'll have a variety of mangoes to choose from. Currently, we're enjoying mulberries. We've had the biggest harvest of mulberries from our mulberry tree that we ever have. I actually put some in the freezer, so that's good to have fresh mulberries on my as part of my fruit in the morning, so I've been enjoying those. Tower Garden is starting to come back to life with some tomatoes and peppers. Got some Swiss chard and eggplant going on, and some oregano and basil, so yeah, it's not too bad for, you know, benign neglect over the last several months, so happy about all that. I would like to start with a congratulations to one of my members of the practice. And I'm not going to say her name because I'm going to talk about her a little bit. But she ran her first 5K at age 75 this past weekend. And she has been a member of the practice for a couple years, I believe. And she came to me converting to be plant-based after having had heart attack, stents, breast cancer, and she has diabetes that was really difficult to manage on insulin. And we started to refine her plant-based diet, and it's kind of gone along pretty good. And I've encouraged her, like I talk about on the podcast, that we really need to get her moving more, because we want to get that muscle mass built up and the mitochondria built up so we can actually have her metabolism go up a little bit and have her start, burning through some of her energy a little bit more efficiently. And so I'm trying to get her to move more. And she informed me when I first met her that she did not like to sweat. Now, that's something that's hard to avoid in Florida, especially in the summer months. But she said she didn't like to sweat. She wasn't going to sweat. She would exercise inside. She did a step routine. She did some stretching, but wasn't going to go outside. And she did ride her bike. She got to the point where she would go out for a bike ride, and she was riding a three-wheel bike around the park with her husband and a couple other ladies, but not really wanting to do much that made her sweat. And she kind of stalled out on getting her glucose under control a little bit. And I kind of forced the issue a little bit as far as, you know, we got to kind of pick up the pace here. You know, we talked about portion control, even though she was eating plant-based. You know, sometimes when the weight is not coming off, people don't realize that, you know, if you're 5'2" or feet, I don't know how tall she is, but, you know, our caloric intake is based on our lean body mass, not the mass that we are carrying around. And if you're 5'2", your lean muscle mass, especially at 75, is not very large. and therefore your caloric needs aren't very large. I'm not sure why we keep our appetite as if we might be bigger, but our appetite doesn't seem to shrink much over the years until the, you know, a long way down the pike, so to speak. But nevertheless, we talked about that, and it's a kind of a difficult concept because a lot of people sell plant-based nutrition that you can eat as much as you want, and it's a great way to eat because you can eat all the fruits and vegetables and whole grains, and you'll never gain a pound or you'll lose weight and your body weight will come back to normal. It's not necessarily true. I used to give a lecture and talk about a manatee because we have manatees in Florida, and the ones in the captivity, they feed about 140 pounds of romaine lettuce a day to maintain 1,500 pounds. So you can maintain a large volume eating lettuce. Horses maintain a large frame size eating oats and grass and things. So if you eat enough, you can gain weight. And certainly, you know, I use the example now that running 100 miles, I lost a pound because I ate most of the 31 hours that I was out there. So we do have to lower our caloric intake if we want to reduce our overall weight and body mass index. And that is kind of a hard pill to swallow sometimes, especially if you're a good cook and you make a lot of things and you get all this food laying around and, you know, you have an appetite. So we had some discussions over that over the past, and I'm not sure exactly what happened or where she saw something, but she came in and told me she had a goal to do a 5K, and I said, well, you know, let's get signed up for one. So she did, and so she signed up for a 5K this past weekend, and her husband had been going outside to start to practice for it. And they were going to the college and they were walking in a somewhat shaded type area. And she progressed her distance up from a quarter of a mile to a half a mile to a mile to a mile and a half. And she realized that getting up early here in Florida is better because it's not quite as hot out. And she started to sweat a little bit and didn't mind that either because she was starting to feel good. And she was very determined that she was going to finish this 5K. And so about 3 weeks before the 5K, her and her husband did a practice run, and they kind of figured they could, they did a practice run an hour and 8 minutes. And so they knew they could finish, and so they were set. And apparently she did another practice run too, but she didn't tell me about that one. So I didn't tell her, but I secretly went to the venue that the 5K was held. It was held at Welland Park here in South Venice. And it's about 7:30 in the morning, and I'm looking for her. The race is about ready to start, and I'm not seeing her. And I was like, "Oh man, she's gonna bail on me." And I'm gonna call her. I'm gonna call her out on it. But there, I looked up, and there she was, her and her husband, all ready to go. And when the gun went off, and the people started to do the little jog, so did she. And she was very, very excited, and finished the race in 59 minutes. So I thought that was just fabulous. And she was so excited, and her husband was so excited that they were going to do another one. And I actually had another member run the 5K there, too. She's more of a seasoned athlete, but nevertheless, you know, so the practice was represented. It's the first race I've watched in quite a while. And again, my observations are whether it's a 5K or a marathon or an ultra marathon, the atmosphere at a race, a foot race, is always positive. There were people there probably from 3 years old to, I think, the oldest person, 87, female. There was 86-year-old male. There were in the 80-year-old women's category. There were 14 in the 75 to 79 age category. So, I mean, it was very, very well represented. The race was, I don't know, there was probably 300 or 400 people in each of the age groups. I think a total was 521 participants is what I found. There was a half marathon as well that went off earlier, a couple hundred people in that. So it was a very nice local event. And again, all this positivity, people were so happy to be able to complete the race and run with their friends, run with their dogs, run with their strollers. You know, if you haven't done a 5K or a 10K or a marathon or ultra, you ought to think about signing up, because I got to tell you, if you go to Disney World or any other place, you don't see people as happy as you do at a road race. Uniformly, people are very happy. They're thrilled to be there, even though it's early in the morning. It could be a family event. And I saw old friends there from when I first started running with the Zoomers. And it was just nice to see people of all ages out enjoying the outside and enjoying physical activity. So I can't recommend it highly enough. And a lot of times it's what it takes to get motivated. You know, you sign up for something, you send your money in, and it keeps you honest. And you then complete it. And the best thing to do after you complete it is to sign up for another one. So congratulations to those who finish it. And, you know, the quote of the day from, I think it's giving credit to Jim Rohn, but you are the average of the five people you interact with or associate with most. And I think that's very, very true. People that hang out with people that are active tend to be active. People that hang out with people that, you know, aren't active aren't as active. If you're positive, people, you know, hang out with positive people and so forth. And again, that 5K community, even if you don't know anybody, it's a great place to meet some positive friends. At our practice, we have, you know, plant-based lectures and potlucks and nutrition class to try to get people to get together, to have that kind of community and form that kind of community, so that they can introduce plant-based nutrition to their friends. And, you know, hopefully, you know, it spreads, you know, the nutrition spreads into the running and the running spreads into the nutrition area. Like I said, I knew this patient for a couple of years, but I didn't know her complete story in that she let me know this while we were standing there talking about the race and their future plans, that they were very much sailors. And they'd sailed all kinds of different sailboats. And I thought it was very interesting when I looked back on it. So here, when she was younger, she was out on a 40-foot sailboat, manning the lines and doing all this physical activity, obviously out in the sun and outside and most likely sweating. But I suspect that illness got in the way. And with a couple near misses with breast cancer and a heart attack and diabetes, she started telling a different story. She'd start telling a story of, I don't sweat, I stay inside, I'm going to enjoy the good life. And while the easy button seemed good, it really wasn't doing her any favors. And I hope this is a good turnaround for her. But, you know, I think that, you know, often something like that happens to people where it kind of derails them. And, you know, I know myself, if I'm not active, I could probably become inactive. You can get out of the habit pretty quickly. You know, sometimes I think I push some of our members too hard and ride them a little too hard to, you know, change and do things. But it's easy in my practice because I know they're there because ultimately they want to get healthier. They're choosing to be a member of the practice. I apologize if sometimes I do push them a little too hard or ride them a little too hard. But it's only because, you know, I have high expectations for myself. I see their potential. And, you know, their success is my success. And we want the best for all of our members. So I've had a few people ask me about Ozempic and the like. I'm using Ozempic as a generic term with Wegovy and a bunch of different of the same class of medications that basically are used for weight loss as well as diabetes. They decrease your ability to empty your stomach, and people feel full, so they eat less. It probably turns off some brainstem chemicals that make you not as hungry, and so people eat less. And so some people are having some success about losing weight, and that's making people think that it's a success. That's making people wonder if they should do it as a jump start just to get the ball rolling, and then, you know, they'll take over. And again, it becomes this focus on weight. And when we talk about weight loss, as I just talked about earlier, you know, weight loss is a calorie deficit that decreases fat mass, but it doesn't always correlate with improving health. People lose weight when they get chemotherapy, but they're obviously not very healthy at the time that they're getting chemotherapy. The hope is they'll come around, but Nevertheless, if you're very ill and you lose weight, again, it's not a healthy way to do it. Starvation is not a good healthy way to lose weight either. It doesn't make people healthier in the long run. But people think if I can just get the weight off and it's built as my insulin levels will go down, and insulin is the bad player in all this because insulin, and it's true, caused the production of inflammatory compounds, interleukin 6, interleukin 2. Insulin spurs the production of platelet-like growth factor that causes platelets to clump and more clotting. It spurs insulin-like growth factor that is a cancer promoter. So high insulin levels associated with diabetes that are prolonged and constant are not a good thing. But we forget that insulin is a life necessary. It's necessary for life. And type 1 diabetes, those people, their pancreatic islet cells get damaged and they no longer produce insulin. And if they don't get insulin, they will ultimately die. Because you need insulin not only for carbohydrate metabolism, but you actually need insulin for all those things, growth factors, but the production of cholesterol, the metabolism of fat, and the metabolism of protein breakdown. So it's a balance that we have with insulin and glucagon, and it's a necessary hormone for life, and it's not something to be continuously shunned. So yes, if you get your diabetes under better control, then you won't have high insulin levels all the time. Typically, people that are glucose intolerant or diabetic, they need much higher insulin to get the glucose to go into the cell because the cell is being blocked with fat. So if you can get rid of the fat, the glucose gets into the cell, the insulin levels go down, and people do better. But that comes with this back end of the medication and the side effects, the gastroparesis that's induced to make your stomach not empty, the brainstem function. If it's functioning on one chemical up there, it's probably functioning on another. There's increased risk of suicide. And most of the time when people stop, as I talked before about, their weight comes back on unless they vigorously change their lifestyle and continue to exercise. And that doesn't happen very often. It's a small group of motivated people, just like the people that are successful with any other weight loss mechanism, whether it's, you know, Weight Watchers, the way it used to be. Now it's getting into the medication realm, or Jenny Craig, or any of those things. It's a caloric restriction so that people eat less and they ultimately lose weight. But our focus should be on how do we improve our nutrition status in the same time decreasing our caloric intake. And that's really what it's all about, because after the weight is gone, and even if you get a gastric bypass and your weight goes down, is how do you eat to maintain health? And if you don't have a good handle on that, you're going to overeat. And, you know, chances are if your weight is up and you're having trouble getting rid of your weight, it's not because you're eating too many carrots too many kale smoothies or whatever. It's because of the junk food that's on the side or on the top of. And so if you never learn to put a fence around some of those things, they're going to come back to haunt you. And there's no amount of exercise that can undo the toxicities associated with junk food and the toxins with them and what to do with them and your ability to metabolize them. Exercise is needed in order to preserve mitochondria, build muscle, change body mass composition. It's not going to happen with a medication. No medication is ever going to do that for anybody. No, whether it's a testosterone or a human growth hormone or any of that is going to be able to change body composition without putting in some effort. And there's a giant question that's around, why do people look at weight loss, getting healthy, eating more nutritious as being a fight, a battle, a penalty, as opposed to framing it in more of a positive way? My member that ran the 5K had to go out of her comfort zone and sweat and train for the 5K, and she achieved her goal and was very, very happy about it. She suffered to some degree and went against her desire to be in the air conditioning inside in order to achieve a goal that she really wanted to achieve. She turned the clock back for herself, but she had to suffer a little bit for it, and she was willing to. And we do that with just about anything we want in life. We're willing to work for something that we really want, except for weight loss and nutrition often. Whether we want to get a good job or we're studying for a degree or you're trying to prove you're in golf game, there's sacrifices that we all make in order to do something that we really want. And we don't really care how hard it is. We're willing to go through all kinds of hoops to get to what we really want, except when it comes to our health and we're looking for the easy button. And, you know, the easy button has never really panned out ever. And so when people are thinking about getting a kickstart with a medication, they haven't changed their attitude about it. They haven't changed their attitude about weight loss and nutrition. And so ultimately, that's not going to change the outcome. It may temporarily change it, but at the cost, you know, the side effect of, at the cost of having side effects, or just continue a different form of yo-yo dieting. So, you know, I would encourage you to try to change your focus on how you approach weight loss or how you approach your health. And instead of it being, I have to give up, you know, somebody told me the other day, it's like, but we have to, I like the things, they taste good. And it's like, well, healthy food can taste good too. And, you know, a lot of people eat so fast and they eat in the car and they eat on the go that they don't taste those bad things anyway. It's a way of making them full or filling up the tank without taking much time. I saw there's a person that I follow that is running across America to raise money for the Red, White, and Blue team, which is a military organization, ex-military organization that raises funds for depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress, and various other things to support our veterans. And it's a very good organization, and he's running across the United States and hope to raise a lot of money for it. And he, too, admittedly suffers from anxiety and depression, and running was his outlet, and he began running long distances. So he's running to, you know, showcase that running is a good thing for mental health, and raise awareness. However, he's eating junk food the whole way. And yes, he is trying to run somewhere between 50 and 70 miles a day. So it's a huge feat that he's trying to accomplish, and he's burning tremendous amount of calories, but he's eating mainly junk food. So McDonald's, donuts, all this. There's a smoothie here and there, but for the most part, he's eating these junk food meals. And again, a recent study looked at their ultra-processed foods actually impairing mental function. So as Doug Lyle has written a book on this before, as far as our dopamine output with food, if you eat a candy bar, your brain puts out a signal of pleasure. And you know, it's called The Pleasure Trap. I forgot his book for a second. Doug Lyle, The Pleasure Trap. I'll make a link to it. It's excellent. But we put out dopamine as a pleasure hormone. And if you eat an apple, you get a little rise in dopamine. It's sweet, nutritious. But if you eat a candy bar, you get a much bigger rise in dopamine. But if you keep eating candy bars, the dopamine surge starts to go down. So you need more and more sweets. You don't become satisfied with just the one candy bar once a week. You need one once a day, then a couple times a day. And you're looking for sweets really quickly. And again, this was looked at with ultra processed foods. Our body doesn't know how to handle chicken nuggets and sweet tarts and, you know, highly processed cookies and chips. And the people that make this stuff know it too. The chemicals attract our taste buds. We get hooked on the taste of them. We get this big dopamine release. And there's lower fiber, lower water, so we eat more of them. And there's associated with learning disabilities. It's associated with increasing depression and anxiety. So here this guy is trying to run across the country to raise awareness for mental health, and he's eating stuff that causes deterioration in mental health. So, you know, it's not unlike our food intake and weight loss. You know, if you get a gastric bypass, but you're eating junk, how are you going to ultimately become healthy? It's a multifaceted thing. Brain health is related to nutrition just like any other organ. So I actually commented, and he commented back that he liked ice cream. So, you know, it fell on deaf ears. I'm sorry about that. But I think it sets a horrible example for young people. I think it sets a horrible example for people that are struggling with their weight, that here this guy, just because he can run 60 miles a day, he can eat all this processed junk food and still remain thin. And actually, I don't think he looks healthy right now. So I think it's starting to take its toll with the junk food that he's consuming. Of course, you know, as long as you flip through social media, you'll see people that do life hacks and how to save money. And so there was this woman talking about how you could go to Sam's Club or Costco and they have the big boxes of cookies. But if you go back and you ask the people at the bakery, they can give you a giant box of cookies for a cheaper price. And so you can put them in the freezer and you have all these cookies to your preference. It's like, why would you want 6 dozen of cookies around in your freezer? It's just setting yourself up for bad things to happen. And so I don't think we realize that these things that we say we do once in a while occur quite frequently. And what podcast would be complete without a little word for my carnivore friends? They're starting to add some fruit and vegetables and whole grains into their diet because they're just not feeling satisfied over a long period of time just eating meat and eggs. Who would have thought that just eating all the steaks you want would just keep you perfect? And it just goes to prove we aren't carnivores as human beings. We're omnivores at best, and we certainly don't need meat to survive. We can get all our amino acids and protein needs from plant-based sources and at the right amounts. We can eat a lower saturated fat diet, but I thought that was kind of interesting that they're gravitating back to a perhaps a little healthier standard American diet, but nevertheless, they're on the slippery slope to back to where they were. So what diet hasn't been shown to cause cardiovascular disease? People are fighting over the carnivore diet, the keto diet all the time. A study came out this week showing that intermittent fasting was associated with increased risk of cardiovascular disease. Now, it was a very short poster-type paper. It wasn't well done. Market increase in cardiovascular disease, and that got everybody all stirred up that follows nutrition, you know, in the circles, because how could they possibly say this? How could the American Heart Association print such a thing? There wasn't a lot of detail, but the reality of it is, and what I've experienced in my patient population, are those people that try to do intermittent fasting, that little voice comes back to haunt you that has you having trouble with everything else in life as far as your nutrition and starts to say, well, you're only eating for this limited amount of time, so therefore you can have X. And so I do believe that in this study, it wasn't a, you know, we're going to eat in a limited amount of window. And I believe the study was, an 8 to 10 hour window versus a 16 hour window. And so a regular, you know, window would be breakfast, lunch, and dinner, say breakfast at 7 or 8, lunch at noon, and dinner at 5 or 6, and versus just this smaller window. You're more likely to be hungry, more likely to be grabbing what you can. Again, people are looking for convenience, and so they're eating a poor choice in the limited hours, and ultimately they're not making any progress. Again, you can run a race and put a lot of calories in while you're still moving, so just having a short time period does not guarantee that your caloric intake is going to be lower. I do think that a fast can show people what being without food actually feels like, as opposed to you're just coming to the end of a period where you haven't eaten for 3 or 4 hours. We get our stomach growls at 3 or 4 hours after we've eaten. You get the wants or start getting cravings. But if you're actually doing a fast, that's not what happens. It becomes a very slow burn and your body adapts very quickly. And yes, you could eat, but there's not these terrible hunger pains that you're not sitting around focused, rolling around, that you're starving to death. And people function quite well. And there are a lot of people that can do really good at prolonged fasting with water-only fasting, and then come off of it and go back to just a high caloric diet. But if you use the intermittent fasting or you use fasting as a means to reset yourself and to reset your mindset so that you know what it feels like to be hungry or not, or you know that you have the ability, you're not going to kill over if you don't have a Snickers in your purse on the way home from work. So I think there lies some useful benefits, but again, it's how we use the tools that we're trying to do as opposed to make it a way for us to do what we did before just in a different amount of time. And I think it comes back to the easy button. We're looking for ways that we can get to where we're going and so we can eliminate it and go back to what we were doing. But what we were doing was causing the problem in the first place. I had another physician in my town die at a young age of 63. He died of a massive stroke complicated by renal failure. Very, very sad, very nice gentleman, peace to his family. But, you know, I was talking to a cardiologist at the hospital and, you know, what a shame it was that he passed. And he's like, yeah, he didn't really have anything wrong with him except for diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, and being overweight. And it was accepted by this cardiologist that there were just four, you know, little risk factors that shouldn't have taken him out because they're easily treated with medication. And why did he, you know, it's a shocker that, you know, something really happened to him. So again, I'm sure this guy treated himself pretty good with medications, but it didn't work. And diabetes, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, high cholesterol, and being overweight are not benign conditions. They affect a large proportion of society, even the medical establishment. Somehow doctors think they're immune. You can medicate yourself or treat your own numbers and think that things are going to be okay. And, you know, catastrophes like this continue to happen. So the awareness, you know, again, physicians out there, it's not that they don't necessarily care about people, but they haven't stopped to think about how deadly these risk factors are and how little we are doing through medication to reverse them. If we're not reversing them at all, we're putting band-aids on people and patting ourselves on the back that we fixed one blockage and we'll wait for another one to go down. And that's not what we should really be looking at. I was at the hospital this week because I had a 90-year-old that had a slip and fall and broke her leg. And so I made my guest appearance at the hospital. And, you know, it's so infrequent that I have to go to the hospital because my patients don't get sick that, you know, I have to get my login credentials updated and people are shocked to see me. And I'm surprised my hospital badge works to get me in the door, half of the doors. You know, we were kind of giggle as we go through trying to get into some of the things that, it's like a stranger trying to hack in. But I do maintain hospital privileges for my, mainly for my elderly patients or somebody that something happens to that I need to go in and direct traffic for. And, you know, a lot of what I do is actually protect people from things being done to them that really shouldn't be too quickly, because sometimes the procedures and tests that are done to people turn over rocks or do things to people that really doesn't improve their quality of life. So we're all about evaluating people and looking at the risk factors and say, hey, we have to not just treat these risk factors, but we want to try to reverse these risk factors. And there are people that just can't do it for whatever reason. They haven't made up their mind that this is something that they want to suffer enough for to reverse. So we treat them. And I tell them, we're treating you like the regular standard of care with medications, but I don't believe ultimately that we're doing the best we could do for you because the risk is reduced by fractions of percentages in some time. So it's better than nothing, but it's certainly not a complete protection blanket when we throw blood pressure medicine, statin medications, and glucose medications on people, that nothing's going to go wrong. Their disease continues to progress because we haven't done anything to reverse the disease. I'm actually going to have a person on the podcast in the next few weeks, and we're going to discuss mental toughness and mindsets. And I'm actually going to be working with her for my Leadville race so that I can wrap my head around a few things that I need to wrap around. So when the going gets tough, I don't slow down or do what, you know, things that I will regret later, perhaps. But one of the things that she brought up was, you know, you have to know how much you're willing to suffer. You know, what limit are you willing to do to be able to achieve your goal? And of course, that's a lot different from an ultra, from getting your blood pressure, your cholesterol under control to some degree, but not really. You know, are you willing to forgo, you know, dinner with friends, or change some of your friends, or serve your friends different foods? You know, it's good to be social. Why not cook for them? You know, I encourage my members to cook for their friends so that they can see how great the food can be, and perhaps their friends will get more healthy. You know, and that's one way to get confidence, is if you have people staying with you, stay plant-based and cook them a plant-based meal and show them how good it is. Tonight I had momos with a tomato pepper, hot tomato pepper sauce with yellow squash and cauliflower and some a sprout salad on the side. And I made those, you know, they were stuffed with cabbage, carrots, mushrooms, and they were delicious. Nobody, you know, would say, oh, pork's missing. So learning to make recipes that are delicious and serving your friends is a great way to gain confidence in being plant-based. And then you realize you're really not giving up anything. You're just shifting your mindset into eating delicious food that you enjoy. So you're really not suffering at all to reverse your diabetes, your high blood pressure, and your cardiovascular disease, and reducing your weight. It's not suffering. It's just changing your focus a little bit. I had we had tempeh Reubens for St. Patrick's Day with a side of cabbage, celery, cooked potatoes, and potatoes, so an Irish stew plus a Reuben sandwich. We didn't do bread, but we did sauerkraut with a plant-based Russian dressing made out of tofu, along with tempeh, and it was delicious, fermented food. I made chicken noodle soup this week, without the chicken, of course, but I used soy curls instead. But again, the base is the same type base that you would for chicken soup, carrots, celery, leeks. I even put some Napa cabbage in to up my greens a little bit. I put some shiitake mushrooms in a little bit too. You don't have to do that, but I use the seasonings of chicken noodle soup, thyme and sage and a little bit of garlic and a little bit of nutritional yeast. And it's delicious. So there's a lot of things that you can make and keep the variety going that's plant-based, and you're not really suffering at all. I guess the only suffering comes back is making the decision to do it. But the end, the reward is great. So if you'd like to learn more about our practice, go on over to drdelaney.com, drdelaney, and check it out. We have lots of ways to join our practice in a limited sense, all the way to a full-blown membership. So check it out. We'd love to work with you and help you achieve your health goals and to improve your health span and quality of life to the best of your abilities. Thank you, as always, for listening. I'll see you next week. Also, you'll see in the show notes, there is a discount code for water distillers there. So check out the Pure Water Distillers. It's a local American company. And I've had their distillers for a lot of years now, and the water is fabulous. And even when we have hurricanes, I can still make fresh distilled water. I plug it into the generator, so I never have to use bottled water and all the plastics associated with that. So check that out. There's a nice little discount code there. Otherwise, I'll see you next week.